time is 9:04. The date is March the 18th, and we do have a quorum consisting of Senator Stevens, Bundy, Green, and myself, McGuire. And we have three items on the agenda today. Senate Bill 183, the repeal of defined contribution retirement plans. Senate Bill 259, effective date for medical assistance laws. And Senate Bill number 260, which is the revisers bill. And we have a variety of folks here today to testify about Senate Bill 183. And I know you've all been told, but if you could try to keep to 3 minutes, the committee would appreciate it so that we could hear from as many of you as possible. And without further ado, we will hear from the bill's main sponsor, Senator Elton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kim Elton. I'm a senator from District B. I brought my box of Kleenex with me so that I would evoke some sympathy from the committee here as we kick off the testimony on this bill. I appreciate your hearing the bill. As you all know, this bill would hire new employees into the old tiers, Tier 3 for PERS and Tier 2 for TERS. And these old tiers give employees more benefits for almost the same cost that the new tiers, the defined contribution tiers, do. Even though the fiscal note, which I think highballs some of the costs in the out years, details the costs of this bill at about $5 per month per employee. And the numbers are important here. I've mentioned the $5 a month per employee based on the fiscal note. Here are some other numbers. Studies show that 401k plans earn on average 1% less than pensions. The defined contribution plan has no COLA to encourage retirees to stay here in the state of Alaska. And retirees are about a $1.5 billion a year industry in Alaska. And reasonable experts note that the health retirement accounts will often not last as long as a retiree. In fact, if the retiree has a family that's part of the plan, the health retiree accounts can run out in a matter of a few short years. Recruitment and retention is a big challenge for public employers. Potential employees can work for almost any other public jurisdiction in the nation, and they will end up with a defined benefit pension plan and a Social Security safety net, another defined benefit that protects them in their retirement years. The new defined contribution makes retention especially difficult for employers, public employers here in the state of Alaska. And that happens for a couple of reasons. New employees can come here and after a period of years can leave the state, leave the kind of the on-the-job training that they received in the state, and go to other public jurisdictions across the nation, and they get to take with them not only the money they put into their retirement system, but the money that the employer put into the retirement system. And that has a couple of effects. One is it encourages people to leave. They can leave with a large nest egg. They can go to a jurisdiction where they get Social Security, they get a defined benefit, they can buy a house with the employer and the employee money that they took out of the system. But it's also worth noting that the employer dollars do leave, and that has a cost to the system. I mean, one of the advantages of the old system is that there are forfeitures which stay in and protect the employees who do stay in Alaska and work through their working life. The forfeitures add to the benefit that those who do stay receive. The bill also has an option for those who have been hired into the defined contribution plan to switch. That will have a slight cost to the state if they do switch. But it's worth noting that that there are some things that this bill doesn't do, and this bill doesn't change the mandate for a second actuary. That mandate still stays. We still will have the mandated experience studies. Elected officials are still out. And the 2010 deadline for buying back time remains. So those things are not changed in this bill. The bill's fair, it helps attract and keep good employees, and it adds back the COLA incentive for retirees to stay in the state once they do retire so that they can spend their money in restaurants, car lots, and grocery stores, and pharmacies And again, I just note that that's a $1.5 billion economy that we have. With that, I'll stop here. I know you have a lot of people, Madam Chair, who are wanting to testify, but I'd be more than willing to try and answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. We've been joined by Senator French as well some time ago. And questions for the bill sponsor? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Senator Elton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going back up to the Finance Committee meeting, but my staff will be here. If there is need for me, just have him give me a ring.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do good works up there. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and just do a mix between folks online and folks in the room. I'm going to start with folks online, three of them, and then move to folks in the room. So, Francis McLaughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Francis McLaughlin. I would like to ask for the committee's support of Senate Bill 183. I was born and raised in North Pole in Fairbanks. I have a master's degree from in community planning from the University of Maryland, and I've worked professionally as a planner outside of Alaska for 5 years. I was hired by the municipality of Anchorage in February of last year, about this time last year, to be an urban and regional planner for the city. I'm 30 years old, and I have the education and work experience to be well qualified for this job. As a single person, I can work anywhere, and I am very excited to be in Alaska, my home state. If I was older or married, then I would not be able to be a civil servant in Alaska because there are too many disincentives in the retirement system for Tier 4 employees. I'm a Tier 4 civil service employee. There is no defined benefit, and my wages are too low as compared to the private sector to compensate me enough to save my way, invest my way to retirement. If I work 35 years as a civil servant in Alaska, which is quite a long career, then I will not have guaranteed health insurance in retirement. Instead, I will have a health reimbursement account, and I would pray that that would not be exhausted before my future wife and I die. This is because I would have to buy health insurance, and who knows how much health insurance will cost in 2043. None of this is the case for Tier 3 employees. They have a defined benefit and health insurance in retirement. I believe that this is about being fair to your civil service employees in the long term. The state of Alaska should be trying to recruit and retain the best qualified civil service employees. My best friend is a planner in New York. His retirement benefits are similar to our Tier 3. He doesn't have anything that resembles a Tier 4. He will have a pension and health insurance in retirement. That is what I'm hoping to get through Senate Bill 183. I have some incentive to work for the Muni as I'm still young. At least I can gain some experience and then leave to work in the private sector or another civil service position outside of Alaska. There is no incentive for me to continue working for the municipality once the job offers start to roll in. Older, more experienced people have no incentive to work for the municipality. They would have to work until they're 80 in order to be able to afford to retire. The director of my department hopes that I will one day succeed the senior planners, the office managers, and then the director himself, as they all qualify for retirement today. Moreover, they're chomping at the bit to retire. But they know that there is no one with the required knowledge and experience to replace them and keep vital city operations functioning. It seems that the only way I would continue to work for the Muni is when they are forced to try to hire me back as a contractor, which will pay me more competitively. Thank you for listening to my testimony. I would greatly appreciate your support of Senate Bill 183. It's good policy and the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Francis. Next, I'm going to go to Shane Powers in Fairbanks. Shane, are you there? Not there. Shane Powers? Okay. Sarah Groshuge.
Good morning, Chair McGuire, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Groshuge, and I'm a 5-year Alaska resident and a public employee. And I'd like to speak to you today about the effects of the changes in the Purge Church retirement system have had on my family. I began my teaching career in Anchorage in 2002 and was a high school science teacher for 4 years. After a few years of teaching, I decided to pursue a master's degree in public health at UAA. I knew at the time that I would be transitioning from a traditional teaching position to one that combines my career interests in health and education, preferably within the school district, but I was open to moving to other public organizations. I always maintained that I wanted to remain in public service. Shortly after the change in the retirement program, I accepted a position with the municipality as a public health educator, a perfect fit, except that I lost my 4 years of previous service due to the change in PERS TERS. I know many others, particularly those pursuing teaching certificates, while they worked as teacher's aides, will now be placed in a much less desirable defined contribution system. Not only have I lost my defined benefit retirement, in 2010, all that money, wisely invested by the PERS TERS board, will have to be removed. What is the plan for the system then? How much money that is propping up retirements now will be forced out of the system? I want to make the committee aware of the changes to PERS TERS just don't affect future recruitment, and that those coming to Alaska for the first time. It has impacted those already here working to make the state a better place through public service and education. When I began as a public employee in the state, it was with the promise of a secure retirement. I can make more money in the private sector working in science if I wish, but without long-term security, the defined benefit retirement brings. I made the choice to forgo the extra money up front. In addition, I find public service more rewarding compared to my time in the private sector. My husband, also a public employee, and I recently began a family here. We own a home, and we are active members in our community. But these changes in the retirement system have caused us to think about whether we can stay here or if we need to move to a state which provides for its public employees and recognizes them for the service that they provide. Please support SB 183. Thank you.
Questions. Senator Green.
Yeah. Sarah, would you kind of just go over briefly the sort of the line, the time thing of where you worked first?
Senator Green, through the chair, uh-huh. I worked from 2002 until 2006 as a teacher for the Anchorage School District. In October, which was after the July 1st deadline, I accepted a position with the municipality of Anchorage, and that is a PERS position, and I was formerly in TERS. It used to be that you could transfer years of service between TERS and PERS. However, when the defined contribution system took effect, that was no longer capable. So I have 4 years stuck that I can't add any money to in the PERS system, in the TERS system, and I'm now in the defined contribution of the PERS system, Tier 4.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony, Sarah.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm told Shane Powers in Fairbanks is on the line. Shane, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Good morning.
Yes, my name is Shane Powers, and I am a firefighter paramedic with the City of Fairbanks Fire Department. However, I am here representing myself currently. My official start date is June 30th of 2006, possibly making me one of the last two or three employees in the state. I consider myself fortunate to be in the previous PERS retirement system, and I believe the new defined contribution system will be harmful to both employees and government entities. Tier 4 employers receive less compensation than their co-workers and the private sector. Comparing a Tier 4 Fairbanks firefighter to a Walmart employee shows that both receive the same hourly wage. Both Walmart and the state contribute to the employer's retirement account. Including employee contributions, a Walmart retirement collects at up to 12% and the state at 13%, almost equal. However, state employees are shorted on Social Security. Basically, the state has created a system where an individual is better off wearing a blue vest and greeting customers and saving lives as a paramedic. Since my start date, the Fairbanks Fire Department has hired two individuals. One was previously enrolled in PERS. The newer Tier 4 individual has spent his entire employment with Fairbanks Fire searching for other jobs. His last day is April 9th. The cost of training this individual received will be lost to another state. Fairbanks Fire has recently initiated a hiring process. On completion, we expect to have only half of the applicants that we did when I tested 3 years ago. I have several friends currently seeking employment in the fire service, several originally from Alaska. When I informed them of Fairbanks Fire's hiring, almost everyone refused to apply, citing their retirement system as a major concern. Fire department hiring and training is expensive. Local governments cannot afford to constantly replace employees. Employee costs have shifted from the state to the local level. Not only will employee turnover increase, but with a reduced number of applicants, the quality of employees will decrease. Do you really want the bottom of the class treating you in the back of an ambulance? You have a chance to fix a system that is horribly broken, and failure to act will only postpone the crisis for a few years. And I wanted to thank you for hearing this bill. It is very important to me personally. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shane, for your testimony. Questions? Okay, I'm told that there's a PowerPoint. Jim Duncan? My apologies.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. I am going to try to do a PowerPoint, but bear with me. I can turn computers on. Sometimes they don't work for me.
We understand.
For the record, my name is Jim Duncan. I'm business manager of the Alaska State Employees Association. We represent about 8,500 state and municipal employees. I'm here today, though, to testify not just on behalf of my organization, but on behalf of the Alaska Public Pension Coalition. I hope you can see this okay. I don't know if we can darken the lights or not. The Alaska Public Pension Coalition to testify on Senate Bill 183. That's been introduced to repeal the defined contribution plan for teachers. The Alaska Public Pension Coalition is a group of unions and other organizations that have come together to support the repeal of the defined contribution plan. It includes the National Education Association of Alaska, the Alaska State Employees Association that I represent, the Alaska Public Employees Association, Alaska AFL-CIO, the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, Anchorage Professional Firefighters Local 1264, the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association, IBEW 1547, Public Safety Employees Association, National Public Pension Coalition, the Retired Public Employees of Alaska, the Alaska Retired Educators Association, ARP Alaska, the Alaska Center for Public Policy, Teamsters Local 959, and Public Employees Local 71. So I'm here today to speak on behalf of this coalition and the concerns that they have about the defined contribution plan. I'm going to try to do that very quickly if I can, Madam Chair. I will run over your 3 minutes, and I apologize for that. The PowerPoint is a little bit longer than that, but I'll try to move through it as quickly as I can. There are four basic reasons why the Alaska Public Pension Coalition opposes the defined contribution plan. First, it does not provide a secure pension on retirement, and that's very important to our members. Secondly, it provides an inadequate medical coverage for retirees. There's an inability, an increasing inability, to recruit and retain public employees. And finally, there's no overall cost savings in moving from the defined benefit plan, which was TERS Tier 2 and PERS Tier 3, to a defined contribution plan. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to go through each of these just individually very quickly, if I could. First, the point of not providing a secure pension. National studies, and there have been several done, but national studies, this one by the Wharton School of Business of 2004, show that two-thirds of the DC plan participants cashed out their account when terminating employment, leaving them with little or no funds when they actually do retire. A second study was done by the Center for Retirement Research in 2006, showed that the median 401k fund balance for households who have head of households of age 55 to 64 was $60,000. That doesn't sound like a lot of money, and it isn't. And what that means is they will, when they retire, have about a $400 a month annuity income over their lifetime after they retire, which is, of course, not sufficient to really support them into the future. In addition, as has been mentioned, there is no post-retirement pension adjustment, which helps keep up with the cost of inflation. So as time goes by, the dollars will erode. Secondly, the return on investment of the DC plan is less than return of investment on a defined benefit plan. The TERS, PERS financial reports, consolidated annual financial report in December of 2007 verifies this and shows that the defined contribution return on investment was 11.5%, while the return on investment of the defined benefit plan was 18.9%. That occurs for a variety of reasons, but clearly when you're having professionals invest, it is done, they have much more capability and more capable of doing that than when individuals are handling it on their own. teachers and most public employees, and this is very important and one that's often overlooked, but teachers and most public employees in the defined contribution plan, unlike private sector employees, will not receive Social Security and therefore will have no defined benefit plan at all. As you know, teachers are not in the Social Security system, and most public employees in the state are not either, so they will end up with no defined benefit plan at all. The second point is that the defined contribution plan provides an adequate medical coverage for retirees. Under the defined contribution plan, the retirees, in our view, will not have a good medical plan to cover medical expenses. They really will, when they retire, be falling way short with a medical plan. They must retire directly from the state service to access the medical benefit, and as we know, that often doesn't happen, but in order to access it under defined contribution plan, they must retire directly from state service. Secondly, with 10 years of service, they will have to have 10 years of service at a minimum to access the medical coverage at Medicare eligible age, or if they work long enough, they could access it at any time with 25 years of service if they are a peace officer or firefighter. But for all other employees, they have to have 30 years of service. So the access to the medical plan is severely restricted. They do have a health reimbursement account under the defined contribution plan that was put into place. They may use that to pay premiums, but once that is gone, the retiree must self-pay the premium. And the estimate was that health reimbursement account may last 2 to 3 years, and then retirees will have to pay the premium. Retirees must pay 100% of the premiums of the plan until eligible for Medicare. They can have a reduced premium when they reach Medicare eligibility. They can pay between 10 to 30% of the premium, depending on their years of service, but they must work 30 years to pay just 10%. And if they work shorter periods of time, they'll pay an increasing percentage. And this one is the real zinger in my mind. The state may terminate retiree medical plan at any time or change it. They can either change it or terminate it at any time. So it's clear from what has been presented here that retirees under the defined contribution plan will have no decent medical benefit if they have any medical benefit at all. And that's a severe shortcoming of the defined contribution plan. There is also the increasing inability to recruit and retain public employees. I know we've often talked about this, but has never really been analyzed in detail. I want to present some figures here that I think will help put this in perspective. The DC plan does encourage public employees to move on to other employers, does not encourage them to stay with the state of Alaska. Even the State Division of Retirement and Benefits encourages this in their promotion on their website of the defined contribution plan, and I would invite you to go to their website to view this flyer. They have a flyer there that promotes the DC plan. I've taken some excerpts from it. It says, "Get it to go. Your savings move right along with you as you blaze your career trail. We have made the new retirement plan just as modern and mobile as our most adventurous Alaska employees. When you're ready to move on, just take your savings with you. When you change employers, move your savings or take your money with you." Those clearly are statements to encourage employees to come work for a while and leave, but not to develop a career with the state of Alaska. In addition, there's a study that's done annually by the Division of Personnel. It's called the Employee Movement Report, and I have reviewed the Employee Movement Report for calendar year 2006, and when they published it, they made the following statements. There have been noticeable changes in employee movement since the 2005 report. The turnover rate has increased and continues to be higher than the hire rate by 3%. Put it in perspective, the turnover rate in 2005 was 24% and exceeded the hire rate of 22%. As you know, the defined contribution plan went into place on July 1st of 2006. And for the 2006 calendar year, the turnover rate had increased by 5%, from 24% to 29%, and still exceeds the hire rate. So it seems clear to me that there's a corollary there. In the first 6 months of the defined contribution plan being in place, the turnover rate in the state of Alaska was increasing. And the department, this is very telling, the department state government with the highest turnover rate is public safety at 40%. And those are the folks that, of course, that's where the state troopers are, and those are the folks who are to provide safety to the citizens of our state, and the turnover rate is 40%. We did a separate analysis of just our union, general government unit. An analysis of the general government unit employees prepared by our union shows that in 2007, the turnover rate for employees under 2 years of service is 30%. They've come to work in 2007, they stay 1 or 2 years, and they leave, a 30% turnover rate. After that period of time, it drops to 23%, but what is happening is that when people first come, they are leaving very quickly, and that's a turnover rate that's very difficult to develop a career.
Senator Green,
if you could.
Sure.
You passed. Good job. Okay, on bullet number four, in 2006 for the executive branch is 29. Do you think that's really unusual? Or that having been an election year, do you not generally have higher turnover about that time?
Madam Chair, I would doubt if 5% of the folks left because of changes in administration. There clearly is some turnover as a result of administration changes, but I would doubt if it was 5%. And clearly, to verify that, I then did the analysis of the general government unit, which are not political appointees, mm-hmm. and you'll see that our turnover rate was 30%. So it goes along with what the total executive branch was. So there have not been exit interviews conducted as far as I can tell, but I draw a corollary between defined contribution plan going into place and all of a sudden a jump in of a turnover by 5%.
Okay, if I want to, and then on the next bullet, the department with the highest turnover rate is public safety at 40%. And it seems like for, I think even when you were here, there was the, it's kind of an ongoing problem with public safety. And in about the last 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, the aging out of public safety members. And I think that's pretty high, but I'm not sure if that is, that would be nice to see a chart on the trend there to see what has happened the previous year or the next year, or if it's ongoing. Yep. And if it's attributable to the benefits plan or if it's just the 20 or 25 and out.
Madam Chair, Senator Green, yes, I don't have the chart. I can tell you for our general government unit that two years ago we were at 20% turnover rate. We're now at 30% turnover rate, so there's an increasing turnover rate. There may be a number of factors, but I clearly believe a defined contribution plan is one of those. There will be, I think, someone following me who can speak more specifically to public safety issues.
It would be nice to know, are there any, I know you don't conduct exit interviews, but I wonder what, it seems like there'd be value in some kind of a questionnaire that you could ask employees as they were leaving, you know, what were the factors that led to your decision to leave?
Madam Chair, I'm in complete agreement with you. We, as a union, don't do exit interviews. I have recommended to the Department of Administration that they should be conducting exit interviews. In fact, in earlier testimony before another committee this session, I recommended that there should be exit interviews done so we can determine why employees are leaving, because they clearly are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just on that point, what ends up happening is, since I've been here, well, at least in the beginning, in the five-year flatline plan, there were some reduction in state employees, the numbers of state employees, but in recent years they've only grown, and every year it's one here, one there, one right here, one there. So we're not decreasing the number of public employees, but rather what we're doing is making it more inefficient, because we have the same number, but we are in a constant cycle of retraining these individuals. And the on-the-ground testimony that I hear is that if you do stay within a unit, let's say for more than 10 years, you spend a lot of your time training folks that come into your department, or in the case of teaching, in the case of public safety, only to have them pick up and leave in a couple years. So there's a morale issue, and then there's an inefficiency issue.
Yes, I would agree there is. And there needs to be more research done on this. I'm just presenting the figures as I see them right now, the best we have. So shall I proceed?
Yes, please.
So the third point that we were concerned about is there is no overall cost savings in moving from the defined benefit plan to the defined contribution plan. Buck Consultants, in a February 11, 2008 analysis to Division of Retirement Benefits, shows the following: that the TERS Tier 2 defined benefit plan cost less, approximately 3%, than the Tier 3 defined contribution plan. and that the PERS Tier 3 defined benefit plan costs slightly more, 0.75%, than a Tier 4 DC plan, but the overall there is no overall cost savings. So moving from the defined benefit to defined contribution did not reduce the overall cost of the Tier 2 TERS and the Tier 3 PERS either save money or were almost the same cost.
Yes, Senator Bundy.
Yeah, I've heard that information, and I was concerned about it, and I expect we'll have some testimony from Department Administration, but that's a snapshot that I don't think is indicative of it's an accurate portrayal of what the long-term impacts of a defined benefit will be, and, you know, we can all find statistics. 100% of people that ate pickles in 1880 are now dead, but I don't know that pickles cause death. So.
Well, and I think, Senator Bundy, on that point, that's the point of the hearing today and continued hearings is to figure out whether the actions, you know, taken in 2006 were the right ones financially and from a recruitment and retention standpoint. And if they end up being right, so be it. The numbers should prove out and the statistics should prove out, but there are some indicators along the way here that point in different directions, and so my goal is to get to the bottom of that.
And, good goal.
And if there are, and to that end, if there are consultants or individuals that members of this committee know of that could add to that dialogue, I would entertain their testimony anytime.
Madam Chair, yes. And let me just, if I could, just make a statement here. Of course, this is directly from the analysis that was provided by Buck on February 11th to the Division of Retirement Benefits, and I can only take what they say as being factual. May I proceed?
Yes.
The defined contribution, based on what I've shown you, I think it's clear that the defined contribution plan is not working for Alaska and its public employees. It does not provide a secure pension on retirement. I think what I've shown you illustrates that. There is inadequate medical coverage for retirees with the limitations on access and the fact that the plan can change at any time and of course, the high requirement of paying of premiums. There is, I believe, and I think, again, the figures show that, an increasing inability to recruit and retain public employees, and there is no overall cost savings. On the other hand, a defined benefit plan works best for the state of Alaska and its public employees, and it has for years. It provides a stable pension that will enable retirees to stay in Alaska. It has a medical plan that will enable retirees to meet their medical needs. And it maintains the ability to recruit employees and encourage them to make public service in Alaska their career, and I think that's what we should be all about. And a defined benefit plan does all this at less cost overall than a defined contribution plan. So, Madam Chair, I want to conclude my testimony on behalf of the Alaska Public Pension Coalition. We urge you to support Senate Bill 183. We do believe it is the right approach, repealing the defined contribution plan for teachers and public employees and returning to a defined benefit plan, I believe is the right way for this legislature to go, and I urge you to do so. I'd be happy to answer any other questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan. Questions? Senator French?
Just more in the way of a comment than a question. And it's always it always impresses me in this debate, particularly that the people that are coming forward making these arguments don't benefit personally. Mr. Duncan's retirement isn't going to be changed one bit if we change this bill or not.
We should all be so lucky.
but
you are.
I also think most of the people that are here today. I think it's worth pointing out that the people that are passionately believe that this is a bad policy choice, we need to revisit this policy choice, aren't their retirements are set by the Constitution. Yeah. They're not going to benefit. But they strike me as being well-meaning people who are on the ground who see the effects of this policy change in the workings of state government and are very, very concerned about the long-term impacts of having a substandard workforce executing important government functions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Bundy.
I'm sure the senator didn't mean that anybody hired recently is substandard, but I would point out that there are different points of view on personal benefits. Unions thrive on numbers, and if they can recruit more numbers, they strengthen the union. And so it isn't just a matter of their own personal retirement, it's their political influence and strength in the state.
Madam Chair.
Multiple views. Mr. Duncan.
Madam Chair, if I could just make a comment. I appreciate what Senator French is saying, and Senator Bundy, let me just respond directly to you. Unions do survive on numbers, but we really have as our prime goal is to be sure that the individuals who work in the public sector, if we're public sector unions, who work in the public sector, have a good wage and they have good benefits, and when they retire, they're able to remain in the state of Alaska and be able to provide for their medical needs as well, provide, have a stable pension so they can continue to contribute to the state of Alaska. So even though it doesn't impact many of our members because they were hired before July 1st, 06, it doesn't impact me. Our goal is to be sure that those individuals who are coming along now will be in the future when they retire, have the pension and a medical plan. Our other goal is to ensure that we can provide the best service to the citizens of this state as possible through our public employees. And the only way you do that is to hire folks who want to make public employment a career. And the only way they'll make that a career is if they can see at the end of their service that they're going to be able to retire and support themselves, their spouse, provide for their medical needs, and remain in Alaska as active citizens. So that really is why we believe that going back to defined benefit system makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, and on that point, just speaking as, you know, as a member, I too am not affected, was in the Tier 4 before July 1st, and I can see both sides. There are folks in my district from the business community that say, you know, we've had a defined contribution program forever. I understand their point, but I think what I look at, particularly at my age, is the future. And I want to look to my state, to the teachers, to the folks out there fighting the fires, the folks out there responding to calls, the folks out there in the Department of Natural Resources helping to manage our vast resources and so forth. And I just want to know that we've already decided that these are state functions and that we're going to have state employees doing those jobs. I want the best people to do them. And I have concerns, and I just want to reflect it. The members will recall there were differences between the body that I served in's viewpoint on this subject and this body's viewpoint on the subject, and that's okay. Minds can differ, but now we're looking at the impacts of that and whether or not it's important to look back and see if there are changes or not. And I would hate to see us get so far down the line that we really are not attracting and retaining qualified people in the areas that we've decided are important to our state. So if we aren't, then maybe we ought to decide somebody else should do the jobs. I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next up, Bob Klaus. Bob? No? Okay. Jeff Teedy.
Bob Klaus is online.
Oh, he is. Okay, my apologies. Mr. Klaus, you there?
Hello.
Good morning.
Madam Chair and the committee, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of this important bill. My name is Bob Klaus. I've been an Alaska State Trooper for about 22 years, and I've served all over the state. I'm currently stationed and have been stationed in Kluwak for about the last 14 years. I'm proud to be a trooper, and I've been honored to serve the people of the state of Alaska to the best of my abilities. I plan to retire from the department on May 1st under the defined benefit system, and I'm currently training a brand new 22-year-old trooper recruit who is hired under the defined contribution system. The defined benefits pension plan is an essential part of the state's ability to recruit and retrain its valuable workforce. It takes hundreds of thousands of dollars and several years to train a trooper to the point where he or she can adequately function in rural Alaska. You know, we talk about recruitment and retention, but I think of recruitment in simpler terms. You know, why would I want to take a trooper job? Troopers face some of the harshest working conditions of any law enforcement job in America. It's a physically dangerous job, and constant transfers make it economically risky for trooper families. When I personally made the decision to apply to the troopers, I was a Marine Corps veteran and a recent college graduate from an elite university. My father had just retired after 20 years as a firefighter paramedic, and for probably the first time in my life, I followed my father's advice. And his advice was to seek public employment that provided a solid pension plan. The defined benefits plan was a huge factor in my decision to apply. My brother, being a little bit younger and not nearly so wise, chose not to take that advice. He has a similar educational background, and he's working in private industry. His retirement system is a defined contribution plan. He changes jobs every few years for just a few dollars more, and he takes his retirement money with him. He is free to sell his services on the open market, and he makes about $300,000 a year. I really don't think the state wants to get in that kind of bidding war. Finally, retention asks the question, why stay in a trooper job for a full career? You know, troopers have more than their fair share of bad days and tough working conditions. There are a number of competing agencies willing to hire well-trained and experienced officers. You know, as a 22-year trooper, I've faced my share of frustration and disappointments over the years, and I've considered leaving the department and the state on several occasions. But as a defined benefit employee, it never made sense to let the day-to-day frustrations of police work in a harsh environment overwhelm the financial future of my family. I'm currently training a brand new trooper. I provide 8 hours a day of on-the-job training. He's a good candidate, 22 years old. I like him, and I think he'll be a good trooper someday. He was recruited directly out of a college in Michigan. His family is in Michigan. He owns property in Michigan. His friends are in Michigan, and his girlfriend is in Michigan. He was attracted to the troopers for the adventure of Alaska, for the fun of being a cop just like he saw on TV, and because the benefits were better than he got at his summer job at the dairy. When the adventure and romance of the last frontier wears thin and the work gets hard, the defined contribution system will allow him to take his training, skills, experience, and retirement package straight back to Michigan. The Michigan State Police have a similar pay package, and there's nothing holding him here. I thank the chair and the committee for listening to these personal stories, and I think they're more typical than not of veteran and new troopers. And I urge you to support Senate Bill 183 to help the state attract and keep its good employees. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Bob. Questions? Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not a question, a statement. And I certainly thank the trooper for his service, and my comments are not intended to reflect on him personally. But this is one of the problems that I have with the argument that you're frustrated, you're unhappy with your job, but you're sticking around for the retirement. And I think there's a downside to that, as well as an encouragement to keep people in state employment. I don't have any experience in the troopers, but I taught for a long time. And I know, and this is no reflection on teachers in general, but I know teachers who teach for four reasons: June, July, and August, and an early retirement. And that is unfortunate, that we have people who hang around for just the retirement. I understand the other point of view, but there is an opposite to that as well.
When you guys debated this in the elimination, was there any discussion of people who currently collect retirements voluntarily, putting those back into the system to help offset financial concerns? I just wondered when the elimination, when the overall look was made at eliminating the DB plan, was there any consideration for those, you know, of the different generation who are already collecting their retirement checks, sort of voluntarily giving those defined benefits up for the good of the system?
Right after they voluntarily pay, people voluntarily pay income tax.
Right. I guess, you know, my point, I mean, it just sort of, it's interesting where the responsibility ended up shifting in terms of making the system more financially. A lot of folks out there collecting retirement, living pretty securely, and it sort of seems like the look was, well, there's a problem with the system, it's broken, and so therefore we're going to shift that responsibility to the next generation.
Well, I would respond if I might, because I think your comments are aimed at me. When I began teaching, Wasn't too long after that, the Trans-Alaska pipeline and the whole oil development began. In my view, and this is just my view, the state could not afford to match those wages. I could have easily left teaching and at least tripled, if not quadrupled, right, my wages on the pipeline. I chose not to because I preferred teaching, frankly didn't like what the pipeline was doing to Alaska. But the state offered substantial benefits in their wisdom at that time, but it was a little of Sadler's Mattress Ranch. It's buy now and no payments till 2006. Well, it's 2008 and the payments are due. The state was doing what it could at that time in its best judgment, but it was creating an unfunded mandate that, and the bill was going to come due eventually. The bill came due, and I said, that was then, this is now, and we have to make some changes.
Did it have an impact on you personally in staying in the teaching profession, though, and not choosing to go
into and again, and only looking back 30 years, best recollection is wages were far more important than any 30-year away retirement potential.
Yeah. And maybe it was just kind of the time and place, but what I find, you know, over and over the stories of the teachers in my district and people, again, in my generation that come in and say, you know, it is a secure retirement for us that would be a factor. And we love what we do. We love teaching. We'd love to stay. But to offset both the wage side and the benefit side is such a great I feel like a great sacrifice.
Well, and conditions change. My beginning salary in teaching was $12,000 a year. Right. Maybe if I had started as they do now at 30, I would have looked at it differently. But every dollar that went into retirement was a dollar they couldn't put into wages, and I was far more concerned with a young family about wages.
One of the things that's always kind of been quizzical to me in the whole discussion, particularly on the TERS, is that the state is not, the TERS retirement or supplemental benefits or anything they have for teachers would be the responsibility of the district that employs them. And that is the, to me, if I were doing labor contracts for school districts with the school district, I would probably hold back on the request for higher wages and request a plan that the district participates in, because the state is not going to step in and take over the teacher's district. That would be over the district's responsibility for offering that employment package. And I haven't noticed anyone doing that yet, but that the state is not going to pay that plan. That's up to the district. And that may be where some of the shortfall comes in. And I don't know, when we were doing the research on and comparing states, counties, boroughs, municipalities, school districts, all units of government, the Alaska plan for in most areas was probably within the top 90% to 95% of plans. And it appears to me in the admin's comparison of the features of tier one, tier two, tier three, the bigger changes and the more significant changes came in tier two, mm-hmm, to tier three, not tier three to tier four. Because I do remember the conversation as the bill was being written that we were trying to find offsets and supplementals, mm-hmm, to, because I was, you know, kind of concerned on the issue of retirement. Being involved, retirees being involved in paying for medical coverage. But well, in the Tier 3 program, employees less than 10 years and their survivors must pay the full premiums as long as they wish to continue medical coverage. Same as tier two, however, employees must accrue a minimum of 10 years of credited service to have system paid coverage at age 60. And then you have the infusion of the health reimbursement arrangement, and then a percentage based on years of employment. And I can't imagine that anyone thinks that if you've only been with the state a few years, that there should be a fully paid health plan at the end of those few years.
No, and I don't.
And that's where we tried to reach the balance. It's an employer-paid reimbursement account.
Right.
And there was nothing punitive. It was trying to balance out how we get things paid for. And as Senator Bundy said a while ago, the irony is at 65, you're in the Medicare trap anyway. It's another world.
And I just asked Senator Bundy because he's one of the few people, and there are others in the building, but that have good retirements. And I think that's a humane thing to be able to come to the end of your life and know that you have a secure retirement. And it's a quality of life issue, and it goes back to, I think, at least the folks in this building, I can proudly say, are people that I am proud were serving as teachers and serving our state. And I think that reflects the quality of folks that we have been able in the past to attract and retain, and hopefully in the future. And the only reason I wanted to get into the dialogue here, we'll keep hearing the testimony, is that I want there to be open minds as we move forward and as we reflect on this. And it may be that the change was not as drastic as required. It may be that a DC plan was not where we needed to go, but rather to continue to ratchet down on health costs and the number of years of service and where that happened. And I just want the dialogue to continue to be open. Senator Bundy?
If I might, I know we need to get to testimony, and these people have come from out of town. You mentioned the secure retirement. The day after I retired, I started another job. So that's just certainly a personal choice, and some people view that would view that differently, and I'd respect that.
Right.
But the most important thing is this is a problem for me at this point, is because of my personal experience. I think wages are more important for recruitment of young people early in their career than a 30-year away retirement plan. Though, again, other people have different ideas. But it was my hope that money saved from changing from one to the other then would be placed in salaries. And if we're not saving any money, then that's making it challenge. I think other information will hear that we may not save money, but but Grace and children may save money.
Right. And I think that's a good point. And maybe one of the next times that we can continue to look at this is what is happening with salaries. And because I remember that was the trade-off, the portability, the idea that you could attract at a higher wage and there would be some shifting there and then to move on. And I don't know that that's occurring.
Well, I think the one of the things was in that your comment, on the cost savings to redo things and all. In Alaska, there is no ability to look back and change the system.
It's constitutional.
With our constitution, unless you do an offset that is considered equal or better. And so I would say the unfunded liability was the genesis of the trying to find a solution, and that solution had to do with the sharing in the future, as the state was no longer able to keep up with that unfunded liability created by the DB plan. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be the difference. As we had earlier, that the defined benefits plan costs less than the
defined contribution plan, but I would also like to see what's happening to the indebtedness for the future, and if we've made any kind of headway into changing that scenario. And certainly it's been our desire as legislators to invest in that plan to be sure that we do have a secure, well-funded plan. And strangely enough, Alaska, by pre-funding the health benefits, which often skewed our statistics, you know, was kind of ahead of the curve, because they're now all entities are required to do that. The federal government has come out with a new requirement. And so we kind of were a little ahead of the curve, perhaps unknowingly, and kind of brought about a solution. And I think those things entered into it, because we had tried for several years to get, when Senator Bundy and I were on finance, we asked questions about the condition. Information was not particularly forthcoming. And we said to the board, you know, please bring us your suggestions. What do we need to do? What needs to happen? And after no response, we said, we have to do something. Or we're, you know, the unfunded liability is just going to get out of hand. And so that's my story.
Oh, understood. And by the way, for those here in the room, I mean, this is helpful because, you know, you can have testimony and it's appreciative and we'll have lots of it, but this is the kind of discussion that has to take place in order for anything to ever move or change. Senator French.
Thank you, Senator. I don't want to hold up the people that are here to testify, but there's been a lot of committee discussion. I think it's important to at least let the folks know that we're not of a uniform view about this topic.
No, no.
That's, you noticed. Hence the discussion.
just a couple quick points. The unfunded liability did prompt this. I think there's no question that that's what got us here today.
Yes.
But I don't think that was the fault of the plan itself. It wasn't the idea that we gave some people a defined benefit plan that created an unfunded liability. What happened was is that there were financial decisions made all over the course of the years that led to that huge gap. It wasn't the workers, and it wasn't the promise they were given when they were hired on as state workers or teachers. It was the way that the people above them handled that obligation. So I think it's unfair to put that to sort of ascribe that to the misplaced promise made to a trooper or a teacher or anything else. We know it was a bad stock market performance and bad projections on healthcare costs.
Some political.
Those are absolutely identifiable, and they were also exacerbated by certain financial decisions made inside this building about contribution rates and how well to fund that program over the years.
Because it was probably easier to say, contribute a little less.
Let it go. Yeah. Moreover, I think the testimony from the trooper from Trooper Klaus really illustrates what is, you know, to the contrary to Senator Bundy's view of what prompted him to hire on as a teacher with salary, what prompted that trooper to take that job was his father's advice that it's a good idea to get a secure retirement out of the job you seek. There's plenty of fathers across the country that tell their young sons, give up a little bit on income, but get a secure retirement, because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. And there's lots and lots of state workers who go to work every day saying, maybe my job isn't the greatest, maybe the job doesn't pay the best, but doggone it, I'm going to get a good deal at the end of it. There's a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow, and that's me not living in peonage somewhere without any medical care. State workers hired today do not get Social Security. I can't say that often enough, because people overlook that. You don't get Social Security. The only thing you have is what you accumulate in your 401k, and the proof is that 401ks don't perform as well as defined benefit plans on a case-by-case basis. So I think it's important to keep in mind that there are strong reasons for going back to the plan we had. There's reasons why other states have gone back, and I'm very glad we're having this hearing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, and I want us to continue the dialogue, but my understanding is that we remain the only state in the nation with a DB plan, and it's for those reasons. And you'll hear some of the folks testify today, but you know, the premise behind it that you know, that there are going to somehow be experts in investing, and that their 401ks are going to benefit them in any way close to what a DB plan would do, I think is very clear. And and all the reasons that Senator French just articulated. Senator Bundy.
Madam Chair, I have another meeting. Would just add that I ignored my father's advice in the draft days. He said, stay in the military 20 years, you can retire and have another career, but vegetating for 20 years was not worth the price for me.
And thank you. And last one I'll make on that too, I mean, I think it's in our best interest if someone made that kind of choice that Senator French just discussed to say, I want a retirement, so I will stay in this as a career. We know in teaching, we know in other professions, that the longer someone is there, the institutional knowledge that they gain is something that we benefit from, as opposed to, you know, sort of using Alaska as a training ground, packing up your money and leaving. Okay, next we have Jeff Briggs.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of firefighters across the state. I'm a senior fire captain in Anchorage. I have nearly 15 years of firefighting experience, and I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I work and reside in Senate District P. As you all well know, firefighting can be a very dangerous profession at times. Every time I respond to an emergency, I must weigh risk versus benefit. That means I must determine if I'm willing to risk my life or the life of the young fireman riding with me to save the person involved in the emergency we are responding to. One of my greatest fears with our new recruits hired on the defined contribution plan is getting them injured and having them receive a permanent occupational disability. They in turn will go on workers' compensation and receive 40% of their salary. Until they hit their 25th anniversary date and they roll into retirement. And they have to, I can't imagine having to raise a family and save for retirement on 40% of my wage. I read an article in Time magazine that stated one in four 401ks has less than $7,000 in it. In 2002, Moody versus Delta Western Incorporated, the Alaska Supreme Court ruled that firefighters and police are not allowed to sue third parties to recover damages which stem from negligent acts. The fireman's rule was adopted, which states police and firemen are compensated with salaries and enhanced benefits, of which I can't name any enhancements that these new firefighters have. Considering that new firefighters and police really don't have any enhanced benefits to speak of, passage of this bill will be a step in the right direction. I know that the Anchorage Fire Department has trouble recruiting, training, and retaining paramedic firefighters in the DC system. We expect it to just get worse. We fully expect by the fourth year, these new employees will be searching for new jobs with a more defined benefit in retirement. They'll take their nest egg with them and will be a training ground for fire departments across the nation. I actually kind of did the same thing when I came into the fire service. The company I worked for had a 401k with matching contributions. I decided to take a chance at becoming a firefighter, which at that time had a more realistic retirement plan than what I had. I cashed out my 401k. I paid a healthy penalty. I enrolled in a firefighter academy and started putting applications in. I feel extremely fortunate to have ended up where I did. I ended up in PERS Tier 2. I certainly would not have quit my higher-paying private sector job to become a firefighter in Alaska today. Anchorage currently has a fire academy with 32 recruits going on. A few of them are working on their second careers. They were shocked to find out that they'd be losing most of their Social Security benefits when they retire. They've been paying into them for quite a while. As you can probably guess, none are happy with the current retirement plan that they have in comparison to the defined benefits plan that the firefighters they're working alongside with currently have. A recent article in Money Magazine equated traditional retirement plans to adding 30% value in salary. So they are technically working for 30% less compensation for the same job. I believe the DC system is great for employees that are not making a career of the current job. It allows them to save for the retirement and take it with them when they decide to make a career. In turn, I do not feel it is an appropriate plan for career employees. It is proven over and over how employees are not able to save enough to survive on if it is left to them. Most aren't even able to afford health insurance more than a couple of years. Alaska is the only state in the nation that mandates its firefighters be in a DC system. The other states that offer DC plans also offer a choice of a defined benefit plan. I also believe that all the other DC plans allow the firefighter to be eligible to receive Social Security benefits. Most people that I've spoken with in various social circles are dismayed by the lack of benefits that firefighters receive. I believe that most residents in Alaska would agree with me when I say that public safety employees that put their lives on the line for the welfare of others deserve to have security in their retirement and return for protecting the community in which they have so proudly served. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to address the committee, and ask that you please move this bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Jeff, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, and my apologies, I had called Jeff TD. Sorry. We got all worked up here, and I forgot. Sorry that you were next on the list.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Teedy. I've been a teacher for 5 years. I'm currently the athletic director at Palmer High School, which is still in the teaching field. It's just a different job. I'm a former United States Marine previous to my employment as a teacher, and I'm a recent transplant to Alaska. My wife, who is in the audience and may not get a chance to speak, wanted me to reiterate the point that she is a lifelong Alaskan that has moved back to live where her fifth generation grandparents once settled in 1935. We moved from Nevada 2 years ago in 2006 for the reasons stated before, as well as a $12,000 increase in salary. When we got to Alaska in July of 15th of 2006, I came to find out that it was 15 days late for tier two for the teacher retirement service system. Basically, when it was all said and done, my income is about $300 more in my pocket a month, which is a drastic change from the $12,000 that I had originally thought would be there. Unlike Alaska, Nevada has a defined benefit plan, which as a teacher I can move back within 5 years and still regain my eligibility. I left 3 years of retirement there. My wife has seven. She was vested. She was allowed to at least reap the benefit of it once she hits a certain age. One major problem with this, regardless of it being a defined benefit or a defined contribution plan, is the lack of ability of people like myself and my wife with children and mortgage payments and everything else to contribute to additional retirement plans. It's almost a paycheck to paycheck issue anymore with the cost of living increases and no benefits in sight. The long range plan for us was to retire here in Alaska, but at this point, moving back to Nevada almost sounds more lucrative than staying. The cost of living is a lot cheaper, and we are still in a retirement system that has the gold at the end of that rainbow. Some of the pros and cons that I've noticed are that the pros is that the money to the state is less early on. There's a good amount of money that stays with the state that they don't have to pay for. The con is that people will take it and run after the 5 years once they're into the system. Teachers will leave. There's many at my school that have spoken of that, as other states have better plans in place. Without reiterating what everybody else has said, earlier on today, I'd leave it at that, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Be sure to get by and meet with your delegation while you're here.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Kurt Fredrickson. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Fredrickson, and I'm here to testify on behalf of the retired public employees of Alaska in support of SB 183. RPA is a volunteer organization made up of 2,300 retired public employee members. I am an RPA member and also volunteer my time on the executive board. I'll keep my comments brief today for sake of time, but I do have written testimony that I'll submit to the committee.
Thank you.
RPA believes Alaska's public policy should support Alaska's families from young to old. Alaska's leaders should encourage Alaskans who built careers and families in Alaska to stay active members of the community after they retire. Retirees should not have to leave their homes and families in Alaska to move to states with a lower cost of living. RPA supports SB 183 because it will restore the incentives the state can provide public employees to retire in Alaska. Without the changes proposed in SB 183, there are few, if any, incentives for state public employees covered by the current defined contribution plan to stay and contribute to Alaska after they retire. There are currently 18,000 retired public employees living in Alaska. Now, according to a September 2006 study by the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research, 23% of Alaska's retirement population are public employee retirees. The study found that in 2004, all of Alaska's retirees brought an estimated $1.46 billion into the state. That was roughly equal to what Alaska fishermen were paid in 2005 for their catch, or the value of zinc, gold, and other metals mined in Alaska in 2004. Simply stated, Alaska's retired public employees make a significant contribution to Alaska's economy. In addition to their substantial financial contributions to Alaska's economy, they also provide significant volunteer work both locally and statewide. If for no other reason than the strength and future of Alaska's economy, Alaska's public employees should be encouraged to live out their retirement years in Alaska and not relocate to some other state or country that would reap the economic benefit of their retirement investments. As a retired public employee under the defined benefits program, I received the Alaska cost of living allowance that was established in 1966 as an allowance to assist retirees who elect to remain in the state to defray the higher cost of living in Alaska. The COLA for defined benefits members is 10% of their base retirement benefit, or a minimum of $50 per month, whichever is larger. No COLA is provided to an employee under the defined contribution program in state law. As a retired public employee under the defined benefits program, I am also entitled to a post-retirement pension adjustment based on increases in the annual consumer price index for Anchorage. Like the COLA benefit for staying in Alaska, current state law does not provide a post-retirement pension adjustment to public employees covered by the defined contribution program. Finally, as a retired state employee under the defined benefit program, I receive health care coverage until the age of 65. After the age of 65, the state's health insurance coverage becomes secondary to Medicare. Unfortunately, public employees covered under the defined contribution program run a much greater risk of finding themselves with far less coverage for health insurance when they retire. Public employees that have a break in service or do not retire directly from the state would not have access to state health care coverage. Alaskans who make it to age 65 often have to prepare financially for a long time in retirement. 29% of women who reach age 65 will also reach age 90. 18% of men who reach the age of 65 will also make it to 90. With the very limited medical benefits under the defined contribution plan, no post-retirement pension adjustment to help offset inflation, and no cost of living allowance for living in Alaska, RPA fears the exodus of retirees from Alaska will increase, seriously affecting the Alaska economy and Alaska jobs. 30 years ago, when I began my career as an employee of the state of Alaska, I was promised the possibility of a retirement pension based on a fair percentage of my working salary that includes reasonable cost of living adjustments while living in Alaska with available health care coverage. A person starting a career with the state of Alaska today is denied a reliable retirement pension with very limited access to post-retirement health care coverage and no cost of living adjustments for retiring in Alaska. To encourage Alaska's public employees to live out their retirement years contributing as an Alaska citizen, RPA asked the State Affairs Committee to pass SB 183. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Paul Ortner. And any written testimony that you have, if you submit it to me, I'll make it part of the public record and distribute it to committee members. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee. My name is Paul Ortner. I'm a psychiatric nurse. I work at Alaska Psychiatric Institute. I'd like to thank you for hearing this today. I am a public employee with a defined contribution retirement plan. I'm proud to say that I'm approaching 20 years of public service as someone who already has a defined benefit. You may ask what horse I have in this race. My horse is the ongoing viability of the hospital I work for, not just while I work there, but its ongoing future. Wages have never been what draws or keeps people in jobs like mine. The promise of a secure retirement has allowed me to grow in my career and to develop an attachment with the facility that I work in. Despite public perceptions that public service jobs are overpaid with incomparable benefits, possible applicants for jobs at API really find that's untrue. We are losing long-term employees in roles that are best served by experience, from the nurse that provides direct care across the board to administrative roles like my own. Direct care to acutely ill mental health patients is very difficult. At this time, we are attracting mainly new graduates to fill our direct care vacancies, and after a couple years of developing the experience needed to serve this population, they will likely move out of state employment to the greener pastures of the private sector. It is increasingly difficult to move employees into roles of increasing responsibility internally because new employees see no advantage of ongoing state employment. Quality applicants from outside the hospital are few or just not there. When we do find that rare qualified person coming along, it requires advanced step hiring to get them to commit to the positions, and holding on to them to any length of time is often unlikely. A defined contribution retirement plan provides positive incentives for employees to stay with API and grow their careers. API provides comprehensive, sophisticated care. It is work that requires a distinct set of skills that develops with experience. It becomes challenging to provide safe and capable care without a stable population of experienced employees. Positions like my own are best served by people of experience who have risen up through the ranks of the hospital, who have institutional knowledge of the hospital. The possibility of that has been removed by making the state workforce a transient workforce. This is not a phenomenon that is exclusive to just API's nurses. For example, we recently had a medical records manager leave us. She was a 25-year employee of the state. It was a blow to lose her considerable experience because having a well-run medical records department is crucial to patient care and helps protect the hospital from litigation. The requirements for her position had to be downgraded to find someone who would actually be able to fill that role. And we were very lucky. We found a bright, young, capable person who is a quick learner. And it would be best for the hospital if she were to make a career of staying with us. But once she has experience under her belt, her opportunities outside of the API will be considerable, and it is unlikely we will retain her for more than 2 or 3 years. This scenario is playing out in each department. It's not just unique to medical records or nursing department. Each experienced long-term staff we lose becomes an unstable position. The negative impact on the level of service we can provide is real. We are constantly trying to orientate a workforce to this very specialized care, only to see them leave. API has shown tremendous improvement over the last 10 years and has been very responsive to the needs of the entire state. API provides innovative care to those suffering from mental illness. Not having a workforce that is stable over the future will shift API's resources to constant recruitment and training and decreases API's ability to meet its mission. I believe exposes the hospital to increased risk, cost, and liabilities, which then reflect on the state itself. It is my hope that our senators will recognize the value in providing a defined contribution retirement plan and the stability of teachers and public and employee workforces, and I thank you for taking the time to hear my testimony today.
Thank you very much, Paul. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, next is Rick Foster from Homer. Good morning. Welcome to Senate State Affairs.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm Rick Foster. I'm one of Senator Stevens' constituents. I'm from Homer, and I'm a first-year teacher at Vozinseca School, which is at the head of Kachemak Bay. It's an old believer village. And I teach history, biology, and I'm certified in history, biology, and music. I realize I don't appear to have the profile of a first-year teacher. I mean, my gray hair alone, but also my education experience. I've returned to teaching. I have a PhD in resource ecology from University of Alaska Fairbanks, master's and bachelor's from University of California, and I've worked in resource agencies and resource development and in the private sector here in Alaska. I've also taught in public and private institutions both in California and Nevada. And I taught at the university for 13 years, 4 years, or 3 years actually, with the University of Alaska system. But I was with the TIAA CREF at that time. I most recently spent 7 years, a little over 7 years, with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as a habitat biologist at the Kachemak Bay Research Reserve. And I'm vested in PERS 3 and just 32 months short of my 10 years where I would get my medical coverage when I retire. And that's the part that frightens me. As I understand it, I will not be able to get the state employees will have no certainty when we retire from the defined contribution plan and the whole Social Security. I do have paid into Social Security, but I understand that will be cut off. I'm not real sure exactly how that all works out. I thought I could link my 7-plus years with PERS that I got from Fish and Game with the state retirement system, and apparently that's done with TERS 1 through 3 and or PERS 1 through 3 and TERS 1 through 2, but not with the TERS 3 defined contribution plan. So we all know how important it is to have teachers with multiple certifications here in Alaska who have numerous skills and experienced teachers. And will Alaska be able to attract teachers from outside? No, I don't believe so with the defined contribution plan. And I would even argue that it's more desirable when you come from the private sector or from the public sector before choosing to teach in our schools. And I would argue that we'll not be able to attract people with the defined contribution plan. And we'll also not be able to attract top-notch resource scientists, not with the salaries that the state pays, unless they have defined benefits. So what are my plans? Well, I love teaching. I don't want to leave teaching, so I'll either have to leave the state if I want to continue teaching, or I could go back to the state, working for the state, and try to complete my last 3 years with the PERS system. What are my options there? Well, I could. I know friends who, from Homer, who come here to work for the legislators because they can get their additional 3 years or what I would need for my PERS time. I could get a non-certified job within our school. I could actually clean up the classroom and get my PERS time that way. Or I could get on the school board, run for office. I appreciate your valuable time of listening to testimony. I'm on both the Planning Commission for the City of Homer and for the Borough. And I know what it's like to have people come in and sit, wait through a long, sometimes unexciting meeting to speak to an issue and having you listen to us and not be just taking notes on something else is very important to me. It's very hard for me when I'm sitting listening to testimony when I know I can't do anything about it. But here you can do something. I hope I'm apparently speaking to the choir to some extent here because I know how some of you feel at least on this issue. But to me, Bill 183 would be a positive move for Alaskans. For education for the children of the state, and I'd certainly appreciate your support of Bill 183.
Thank you very much for your testimony. You. Questions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rick, it used to be the system that you could go from PERS to TERS back and forth, and I guess I'm a little surprised to learn that that is not possible now. Do you have any other how did that come about? Where does that say that you cannot transfer from one to the other? And maybe I need to talk to someone from the department about it, but any further information you have on that issue of transferability from PERS to TERS?
Through the chair, no, I sat down after I had left the Fish and Game and taken the teaching job, I sat down with a specialist in PERS and TERS who was speaking to the city of Homer, and I went there to have an appointment, and they told me point blank, we cannot link that it was in the previous system you could, but now you can't, and that my choice was to either leave the state because I was not going to be able to collect those additional 3 years, or, as I brought up, go back into the PERS system through one other, through another job.
Well, thank you, Rick. So they're both absolutely standalone.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And Shalon, if you'd check to make sure Pat Shire is still here, we'll go to Ben next. And Pat is the director of the DRB program, and he could explain that. Pat's here right now.
Madam Chair, yeah.
Yes.
While we're on that point, it'd be good to make a record, I think, to answer.
Let's go ahead and have you. Pat come up, and then next, Ben Walker. Pat?
Madam Chair, for the record, Pat Shire, director of the Division of Retirement and Benefits. I have following me in the door Kathy Lee, who may be more useful to us in terms of the subtleties of the plans, but on the question of the moment, if you'd care to restate it.
Well, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question is, as I recall from prior retirement systems in the state, you can take PERS service and TERS together and use them together for one single retirement. From what Rick has said and from others have said, it sounds like you cannot do that, that one cannot backpack on the other, so to speak. So you have to retire from, if you spend 10 years in one and 10 years in the other, they're two separate systems with no connectivity.
For the record, my name is Kathy Lee. I'm the retirement manager for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that's correct. There's no connection between the two DCR plans. In the defined benefit plans, there are two different ways, if you have service in both PERS and TERS, that you can obtain a benefit. If you're vested in one system and you have at least 2 years in the other, you can have what's called a conditional service benefit. So you can get a benefit from both plans. If you are not vested in either, but you have at least 3 years in PERS, you can transfer your TERS service to PERS, and if you have at least 5 years, you can qualify for a public service benefit. So there's two ways in the defined benefit plans to be able to use the years you have in both systems. But in the defined contribution plan, there are no connections between the two plans. So if you do start in one and move to the other, the service does not combine.
Senator French.
And just for the record, those changes were brought about by SB 141, is that right?
Through the chair, Senator French, that's correct.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Stevens.
Could we get a, I'm not sure, maybe I should talk to you personally, but I would like to know if the cost of combining the two. I mean, is that, can you figure that out, or is that even possible to, it's a good system to allow people to take years from PERS and take years from TERS and combine them together, but I assume that it's a matter of cost. Do you have any data on the dollar amount it would cost the state if we were to go back in that one little section, that one little piece of combining PERS and TERS for retirement?
Madam Chairman, Senator Stevens, for clarity, you mean specifically combining the service credit in order to qualify for vesting?
Right.
Did you have anything to follow
up? Maybe not there? Just vesting. Maybe I'm misunderstanding that, because prior to this, you could retire, say, in TERS, and if you had some PERS service, that would combine for one retirement. Isn't that true? Say 10 years ago.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, actually that's not quite true. It's one check, but it's two separate benefits with two separate health and eligibility. So if you have a PERS benefit and a conditional TERS benefit, you actually have two health plans, and they coordinate together. Under the DCR plans, you would have to determine how you wanted to combine those two, because there's also a requirement under the DCR plan that you terminate from active employment in order to access the medical.
But I think,
and I'm not prepared to even ask the question at this point.
No, but
I thank you.
I think what Senator Stevens is getting at, and we can talk about this before the next hearing, but is the vesting part really, and the idea that you could go from, PERS, as was discussed from Senator Stevens' constituent Rick Foster. So you can see he's habitat biologist, excellent training ground, goes in and wants to be a teacher in Homer, and brings that with him, that experience. And so the idea would be, before 141, you were able to then combine, prior to vesting, your time in the TERS system now, your teaching credits toward your overall vesting term of service. And 141 eliminated that. And I think what he's getting at is, what would be the cost associated with fixing that part of what happened in 141, the disconnect?
And that's the question I would have asked if I were fast enough and smart enough. But thank you.
So could you be prepared to answer that question?
Yes, we can, Madam Chair.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, Ben Walker, my constituent.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
And Senators. And actually, I live in your district and work in Senator French's district at Romig Middle School in Anchorage, Alaska. In addition to seconding many of the things that have been set up here previously, I wanted to highlight a couple things. I grew up in Ketchikan, then I moved to Anchorage and actually graduated from Diamond, and then went away, and I came back after teaching English in South America for about a year. And decided, because my mother was a teacher, that it would be a good profession. I went to get my master's at UAA. And when I started the program in 2005, of course, it was a different retirement program than when I finished in 2006. Romig actually made me an offer and hired me before July 1st, but due to the processing with certificates and the district and everything, I didn't sign a contract until after July 1st, which means I'm actually on the new plan. I'm not an expert in this plan, but I do get my quarterly statements. And when we first were put in the plan, they send you the questionnaire. You fill out the information about yourself, your age, when you'd like to retire, all these things. And then you're put into, by choice, one of the different levels of management. I went with them managing, Great West managing mine. To highlight, for the statement period of the last quarter of 2007, which I believe, if you do not have a copy, you can, or you do have a copy. Not only did I lose $154, I had to pay $12 to do that. so I'm paying an extra 10% on what I lose.
Mine, by the way,
welcome to the
real
world.
And that's the thing: is previously a teacher, I worked at a private sector company with a 401k, and they picked up the fees for me. I made my own contribution; they matched it, but they picked up all management fees. If I did lose money, I didn't have to pay to do it. And I actually ran the numbers on, since I've been in the plan, the actual numbers on what actually comes out of paychecks and the employer contributions, so no change in value. And I have put in approximately just a little bit over $8,600, $8,400, and my account is now at $8,500. So that's a pretty small percentage for almost 2 years of a 401k, it's I believe about 0.9%. So if I could, put it in a savings instead, maybe, or something, that would be nice, because it's actually not going to be a very decent retirement. And I'm currently engaged to another teacher, and we're going to have to face a choice of one of us is either going to have to stop teaching, or we're going to have to move to another state that has a better retirement program for both of us and children and things like that. So thank you for your time. And if you have any questions.
Thank you, Ben. This looks a lot like mine. You need to get out of this Brandis International Fund.
Yeah.
They charge a lot.
I didn't choose that. That was the managed.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're highlighting is, a lot of the concerns I've heard is just that, we're teaching and we're not experts in financial management. And one of the things we'd like to get away from is just have somebody take care of that, and we're willing to sacrifice on our salary, but now on top of it, we're trying to become financial experts as well. And
oh, yes, I definitely agree. I have spent many times on the website looking and debating whether to call and switch, and of course, if I switch, then I'll spend more time on the website when I already have very little time to do things like this.
Thank you very much. Yes. Questions? Okay, thank you, Ben. Okay, and we have to go on the floor at 45, so I'm probably going to be able to get to two more of you, and then I'll recess to the call of the chair and hope that some of you are around and we could maybe reconvene just to get your testimony, because I appreciate that you've flown in. So why don't I go ahead and take I'm just trying to see who else has flown in here. Okay, why don't I get the two of you there that have flown in. Jake, is that what you said? Okay, yes. Jake Todd? And then we'll do one more and we'll just race out to the floor. We'll recess to the call of the chair. And thank you, no disrespect at all. I was trying to engage the committee a little bit because that's how we make the decisions and so forth. So,
I'll make this brief. Most of the main points have already been made much more eloquently than I can make them here. I'm not a financial planner. I don't really care to be. my name is Jake. I'm a teacher at Service High School. Same high school where I graduated from. Same high school where both of my parents were teachers, security guard, librarian, a number of different positions. I'm a fourth generation educator. I'm a second generation Alaskan, a second generation Alaskan educator. My parents have over 60 years of teaching experience. They actually taught Senators Bundy's and Green's kids at Service. This is my first year teaching. I came back to do my student teaching here because this is where I wanted to be. I left to go to college and I came home. This is where I spent the first 19 years of my life, and it's where I want to spend the rest of it. I came home at great expense and great long hours of travel with duffel bags of books and clothes to be here. So it wasn't exactly moving up with a family. It's still difficult, and it's an expensive place to be. And now I'm leaving. I'm quitting my job because I cannot make it here. It's ridiculous. What police officers and firefighters, teachers and public employees need is to be able to retire with dignity and with security. And tier three or tier four, it doesn't provide either of those two things. And the other 49 states do. And they continue to do so. And they have been, and it's just, they're looking pretty nice right now. I cost the Anchorage School District $12,000 this year by them training me, and I'm walking away. So think about that. When I know of at least three other teachers that are first years that are also quitting. The previous retirement system wasn't broken. You guys just got some bad advice. And way to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because you threw my retirement plan out with it and my dreams of coming back to being an Alaskan for the rest of my life. Right now, I'm not eligible for Social Security. You guys have already heard this. All my eggs are in the basket of the market, which is facing the largest recession in recent memory. I don't want to be here right now, and it doesn't help me to sleep at night, reading the headlines and seeing, oh no, feds are cutting interest rates again. That's not something that makes me feel good. Anybody who truly believes this retirement plan is worth it, put it up. Trade me. If you guys are going to vote, of course, the people that I wanted to address with that aren't here, but if they're really going to support this, then trade me, if they don't think that it's really that bad. I don't think that I deserve any less than Con Bundy did for doing the same service to the state of Alaska, just at different time periods. So I've taken this opportunity during the lapse in common sense here, and I've volunteered to serve my country in the Middle East for the next 2 years. And when I come back, I want this problem solved. Or else you guys are going to lose a homegrown teacher that wants nothing. I don't want to be a principal. I don't want to be a legislator. I don't want to run for any kind of office. I want to teach school. I don't want anything else. And right now, I'm unable to do that.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, last one. Great. and then we'll recess. Morning.
Morning. My name is Scott McDonald. Thank you for listening. My testimony really mirrors Jake and Todd's, and it mirrors more than just theirs and my own, but a lot of other people who couldn't be here today, so we're speaking on behalf of them. Hopefully I can make a change. I know that you guys are Alaskans, and you feel deeply about that. You feel passionate about what you do, and that's why you dedicate yourself to public service. That's what I've chosen to do. I was born in Alaska, and I was educated in Alaska. I teach at Mountain View Elementary, and I have a tough class. I have 12 English language learners. I have monolingual students. I have foster care students and homeless students. But I have a good education. I have 60-plus graduate credits. I need every one of those credits to teach every day. I work hard. I'm slated to take 9 more credits. Of course, that all goes towards lane changes and pay raises, but that's not enough when you talk about retirement. When I'm looking over, I'm 35 now, and when I see the future, I really don't see retirement in the future. I see myself working until at least 65, at least. My father always told me to do what I was passionate about. I was silly, and I actually went to art school. Yeah, my bachelor's in art school. So I went back, you know, and he changed his advice. He said, do what you're passionate about, but make sure you can make a living at it, of course, you know. He was good at math, and he became an engineer, and that worked out well for him. However, right now I'm very passionate about teaching. That's what I do. That's what I care to do. I don't care to be a financial manager. I don't care to look at the statistics. I don't know about the correlation between pickles and death in 1880, as Mr. Bundy pointed out. I really hope that I'm able to retire from this state. And right now I'm looking 3 years and I'll be vested. I'm shopping around. Other states are looking good. There's other states with ski slopes. There's other states with mountains. You know, I think of it like some other foreign land down there, but I might have to join it. And I'm not alone here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
And I will make sure that all of the testimony here today that's part of the record is distributed to members who missed it. So, okay? So we'll recess to the call of the chair.
Oh.